哦。
啊。哇。
This is Rodney Greenblatt from Catskill, and you're listening to WGXC, Acra, 90.7 FM.
Find out where the music takes you on the next Deep Threes, when the final recording sessions of the Robert Hohner Percussion Ensemble finally see the light of day. Plus the explosive orchestra sounds of the Dorf Sound Collective and Kamasi Washington. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries, for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Woodhouse Pizza in Greenville, New York. The restaurant is located on the grounds of the Woodhouse Lodge and offers takeout, dine-in, and outdoor seating. Open Friday and Saturday from 4:30 to 9 p.m. Expanded hours start soon. Information at thewoodhouselodge.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of FET Press in Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. The local vaccine news continues to get better. Daily Freeman reports that on March 4th, more than 1,100 Ulster County senior citizens received a first dose of COVID-19 vaccine at SUNY Ulster in Stone Ridge, and 100 doses of the new single-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine will be given to homebound seniors March 5th, County Executive Pat Ryan said. Ulster County is set to vaccinate a record number this week, with more doses arriving there since January. President Joe Biden said on March 2nd that all Americans would have access to the vaccine by the end of May. Quote, I feel very confident that if we got the supply tomorrow, we could get everybody vaccinated in 2 months, unquote, Ryan said. In Hudson, there is a pop-up vaccination clinic for the minority and underserved community on March 6th, organized locally by Bill Hughes for the 1199 census tract, which includes Hudson's second ward and part of the fourth ward. It is for folks age 65 and over and is being held at the Hudson Firehouse at 77 North 7th Street. Quote, our intention is to saturate the second ward with calls, then move on to the fourth. You don't want people not getting the shot because they don't know about it, unquote, said Hughes. The percentage of local citizens who have received at least one dose is reaching 15% and higher. As of March 4th, 18.3% of people in Columbia County have received one dose, 14% of Greene County residents. Ulster County is at 15.6%, and Dutchess County is at 14.3%. In Albany County, the percentage is 20.5%, and 17.1% of folks in Rensselaer County have received at least one shot. That's the good news. The bad news is that the most recent 48-hour rate of positive COVID-19 tests in Ulster County is at 4.5%. which is, quote, not a tolerable level, unquote, and puts county residents, quote, at a significant risk of spread, unquote, according to Ryan.
Melanie Lekasubic is reporting for Columbia Greene Media A virtual forum held by the Coxsackie Athens School District March 3rd was the setting for a heated dispute over the question of whether the district should retire its mascot name, the Indians. Board member Tara Batchner opened the meeting on behalf of the district's liaison committee, encouraging public input on the question. Batchner said the committee is, and I quote, in the information gathering stage, and this forum is part of those efforts to help the board make a decision, end quote. In addition to the forum, the district is also conducting an online survey at its website that will close at 4 p.m. Friday, March 5th. Shelley West, a district parent, teacher, and alumnus, spoke in opposition to the change. West said, and I quote, to many of us in the community, the Indian represents pride, strength, and respect, and we feel that we are honoring the Indian and Native Americans by using that symbol to represent us, end quote. She added, and I quote, spending tax dollars on something that is not broken is unfathomable to me. There are so many other things that money could be used for, end quote. Others spoke in favor of making the change, arguing it is derogatory to Native Americans and should be changed. Athens resident Anthony Patsky wrote in a letter to the forum, and I quote, times are changing and hopefully a more enlightened society will now realize that words, deeds, and actions by the dominant population can be used to stereotype minority groups, end quote. Patsky noted that caricatures and stereotypes are harmful to minority populations. The district had the opportunity 20 years ago to change the mascot after being asked to do so by the state education department, according to Patsky. He said the district declined to retire the mascot at that time. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com.
Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics that according to the Quinnipiac University poll released March 4th, the majority of New York voters do not think Governor Andrew Cuomo should step down as a result of the two significant issues he is currently facing. The poll found 55% of participants believe the governor should remain in office, while 40% support his resignation. Cuomo is facing allegations of sexual harassment and inappropriate behavior leveled by three women. At the same time, the governor and his administration are under scrutiny for how state officials handled and reported nursing home fatalities during the COVID-19 pandemic. According to the poll, Cuomo still has the support of Democratic voters. 74% say he should remain in office, but 70% of Republicans are calling for his resignation. Independent voters are more evenly split, with 52% backing resignation and 44% opposing it. However, by a larger margin of 59% to 36%, participants believe Cuomo should not seek a fourth term, which he has signaled he will do. Cuomo's job approval is now 45%, while disapproval is at 46%, a 30 percentage point drop since the Quinnipiac poll conducted a year ago. And voter approval of his handling of the COVID-19 pandemic has fallen from 81% in May to 56% approval in the survey released this week. By a margin of 59% to 27% of voters are not satisfied with the governor's explanation of the sexual harassment allegations leveled against him. Cuomo has denied touching anyone inappropriately, but has acknowledged he sometimes attempts to make jokes in the workplace and apologize to anyone who may have been offended. The poll of 935 registered New York voters was conducted from March 2nd to March 3rd. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
Chris Bragg is reporting for the Times Union. A report recently released by State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli's office has found the State Office for People with Developmental Disabilities has made limited progress in complying with a 2007 law intended to protect residents of group homes in New York. The follow-up report follows a 2019 audit from the office detailing the agency's problems with following the law. The Office for People with Developmental Disabilities, the state agency responsible for overseeing group homes for the disabled, has implemented one of three recommendations made by the auditors 2 years ago, while two others were not implemented. The 2019 audit found the agency had not enacted policies to ensure that families are insured access to records reporting incidents of abuse or neglect. The 2007 law also requires centers to disclose those incidents to family members within 24 hours after they are reported.
In 2019, Comptroller's Office auditors reviewed records for 295 incidents at six facilities overseen by OPWDD over a four-year period beginning in April 2015. They found that in 11% of the cases, facilities could not provide evidence that they notified family members or guardians less than a day after an incident was reported. The law requires that facility directors release a report 10 days after an incident detailing what steps a center took to address the issue. But in 7% of the incidents reviewed, that did not happen. And facilities did not provide incident reports to family members within 21 days of their request for documents as required by law. According to the 2019 audit, 20 of the 63 record requests evaluated were not distributed on time or at all. In its response, the agency said it implemented the changes identified in its original response to the comptroller's audit, but, and I quote, having disagreed, end quote, with part of the comptroller's recommendations, the agency instead implemented a new training and quality improvement program of its own. And you can read the full story in the Times Union.
Leila Schneider is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the Hudson School District Board of Education resumed in-person meetings March 2nd, with no plans to live stream or record its meetings going forward. Superintendent Marie Suttmeyer said that school district is not required to live stream its twice monthly meetings. Quote, we only live stream when we do not meet in public, unquote, Suttmeyer said in a statement. Quote, the board is not obligated to live stream the meetings, unquote. Common Council President Thomas DiPietro said, quote, I wish the school system had as open a system of meetings as we have here in the rest of the city, unquote. The Hudson District's website has an archive of video recordings dating back to March 2020, when in-person meetings were suspended due to the coronavirus pandemic. The meeting this week took place in a classroom with tape on the floor making desks 6 feet apart and attendees wore masks. Quote, we always plan to return to in-person meetings and we are slowly getting back to whatever normal we can as a district, unquote, Suttmeyer said. The change to in-person meetings was announced on the district's website at sporting events and on the school's electronic sign, Suttmeyer said. However, there was no clear announcement about the change until Wednesday, the day after the meeting. DiPietro does not know how soon it will be before the Common Council will start to meet in person. It depends on when the council members feel comfortable, he said. DiPietro hopes the city can afford to continue live streaming meetings via Zoom after in-person meetings resume. The council meetings will continue to be live streamed on WGXC-FM as they were before the COVID-19 shutdown. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Sarah Tafton is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The public hearing on the proposed Blackthorn Resort campsite expansion in Durham will continue March 9th. The Blackthorn hopes to add 30 campsites to the property. The site plan has been under review by the town board since December, and a public hearing, which began on February 2nd, remains open. Nearby residents asked questions and voiced concerns about the project at the first public hearing in February. Neighbor Tom Lillis said he takes issue with people on ATVs trespassing on his property. He asked how the issue will be addressed with more campsites and more guests. Patrick Pendergast, the engineer representing Blackthorn, said he would speak to the owners about security. At a subsequent meeting, Town Supervisor Sean Marriott said ATVs are not permitted at the resort and advised that all complaints about ATVs be reported to law enforcement. Neighbor Aeneas Pekzak said she had privacy concerns, that with the new sites located so close to her property, it would mean lifestyle changes for her family and other residents. She added, and I quote, there are kids and guests in the road, and it has become a safety issue, end quote. Marriott also indicated she had spoken with the owners about putting up a foliage barrier to help. In response to concerns about an increase in traffic, Marriott said there are no plans to expand the existing road. Local businesses including Gavin's Irish Country Inn, McGrath's Edwards Falls, Lawyers General Store, and Michael D's Motel and Country Campsites voiced support for the Blackthorn proposal. Other concerns mentioned during the hearing include worries about the impact on Bowery Creek and fire safety at the resort. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com.
Mid-Hudson News is reporting that the Ulster County Police Reform and Reinvention Plan for the County Sheriff's Office was approved by the Law Enforcement and Public Safety Committee of the County Legislature late March 3rd. Legislator John Peretti said to some degree the report is a, quote, wish list, unquote. But Sheriff Juan Figueroa called it a compromise and noted the county had a hard deadline of April to file it with Albany. Committee Chair Eve Walter doubted the governor's staff will actually review each of the several hundred reports that will be filed at the same time. Quote, I don't believe anyone in the governor's office is going to read hundreds of these reports that are going to come because every municipality in the entire state has to do it, unquote, she noted. Quote, that said, should anyone look at it, they will see it is a very thorough job, unquote. Lawmakers noted that some components of the report address projects already underway, such as restorative justice. The full county legislature must now approve the plan before it is sent off to Albany. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Emily Munson is reporting for the Times Union that Representative Paul Tonko, a Democrat who represents Albany County and other upstate areas, is now against the filibuster. That's the legislation rule that requires 60 votes to pass most legislation. Democrats currently control the Senate 51-50, and with the filibuster, Republicans can block most legislative action. Tonko said, and I quote, it's important for us to really move forward and to improve this process so that the people's wishes and the people's needs are granted, end quote. He went on to say, and I quote, otherwise, what we have today is a legislative graveyard. This modern filibuster essentially gives minority leaders veto power in Congress, exactly what James Madison and Alexander Hamilton were writing about. The founders did not want this concept to take hold, end quote. But unless Democrats can change the minds of Senators Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Kristen Sinema of Arizona, Democrats who have previously said they support the filibuster, it will stay the law of the land. New York Senator Chuck Schumer, now the majority leader, says he will do something but does not identify what that something will be. Schumer said March 2nd, and I quote, I believe my caucus believes that we need big, bold action, and we're going to figure out the best way to get big, bold action on a whole lot of fronts. We're not going to be the legislative graveyard, end quote. He added, and I quote, very simply, McConnell refused to put bills on the floor. I'm putting bills on the floor. People are going to be forced to vote on them, yes or no, on a whole lot of very important and serious issues, end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 31 degrees. Friday night, mostly cloudy with a low of around 17. And on Saturday, partly sunny with a high near 29 degrees. And Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low of around 17. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
You have tuned into Creative Community Radio Friday, March 5th on WGXC 90.7 FM. At 11 a.m., tune in the Afrosonic Taxi that's listening in on International Women's Day and performances from Lorraine Claussen, Sona Jarbate, and Angelique Kidjo. That's 11 a.m. on the Afrosonic Taxi. Then Nuestra Musica visits 22 countries and one territory in 2 hours. After the local news on WGXC, Data Cult Audio at 2 p.m. features The Sounds of Ovala. Then at 4 p.m., tune in a new feature, the debut of the Hudson Valley Word of Mouth segment from Julia Jorn, and hear a visit with Kostas Agnonopoulos, the proprietor of Pigeon, the antique store in Oak Hill that is in the old Ford store building. It used to be Oak Hill's general store for 150 years, and more recently was a record store. Agnonopoulos will tell stories about Oak Hill and his life to Julia Jorn on the debut of the Hudson Valley Word of Mouth show at 4 p.m. on the WGXC afternoon show. We'll also hear from Hudson Common Council President Tom DiPietro, and he'll preview March Hudson meetings. Note DiPietro is a volunteer WGXC programmer on the station, too. At 6 p.m., the radio signal is turned over to local youth. First, local youth from Clubhouse Radio on Main Street in Catskill are on until 7 p.m. when folks from the Hudson Library lead Bound by Books, where local teenagers talk about the books they're reading. Then at 8 p.m., it's time for Donna and Honey's Love Motel with relationship advice, matchmaking, and more. And then at 10 p.m., a new show on WGXC, Guy Welchek's Champ Sound, is on with club techno, house, and experimental music until midnight on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, March 5th. The day starts off early this morning with a temperature of 12 in Windham and 21 in Cheviot. Those will climb to 32 degrees at 3 p.m. Wind gusts will still be around today, increasing from 20 miles per hour this morning to 30 miles per hour this afternoon. Overnight, a little snow is expected to fall with some possible icing and a low of 20 degrees. Less than an inch is expected to accumulate. Tomorrow will be calmer with wind speeds only in the teens and a high of 30 degrees. Sunday looking very similar with a high of 32. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 1:38 a.m., high tide at 7:38 a.m., low again at 2:31 p.m., and high again at 8:07 p.m. Sunset today will be at 5:35 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:20 a.m. Looking way up, we see a solar wind is due to strike today or tomorrow, with G1 class storms expected. Solar wind speed is currently 383.5 kilometers per second at 6.6 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation is generally fair, with good transmission occurring on the 160 to 80 meter bands. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 32, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of AJ of Whitestone, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Hi, Laura Kuhn here, director of the John Cage Trust, bringing you a deep dive into the intriguing life and work of Renaissance man John Cage, celebrated composer, poet, philosopher, chess pupil of Marcel Duchamp, life partner of Merce Cunningham, macrobiotic chef, exponent of Zen, visual artist, and avid and pioneering mycologist. Tune in to All Things Cage, 7 p.m. Saturdays beginning January 2nd, for conversations with Cage experts and enthusiasts from around the world, right here at Wave Farm's WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, and via the web at wavefarm.org.
You're listening to Wireless Reconnaissance, Broadcast Surveillance, Transmission Art, and more, Saturdays on WGXC 90.7 FM Creative Community Radio.
The other night, dear, as I lay sleeping, I dreamed I held you in my arms. But when I woke, dear, I was mistaken, and I hung my head and cried. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away. I'll always love you and make you happy if you will only say the same. But if you leave me to love another, you'll regret it all someday. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away. Told me once, dear, you really love me, that no one else could come between. But now you've left me and love another, you have shattered all my dreams. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Section 2712, funding for pediatric mental health care access. Section 2713.
It was a long night in the Senate, where clerks tag-teamed to read the 628-page American Rescue Plan. Republican Senator Ron Johnson forced the delay, blocking Democratic Majority Leader Chuck Schumer's normal move to skip the reading.
Madam President.
Senator from Wisconsin.
Reserving the right to object.
Is he allowed?
Some Republicans questioned the bill's $1.9 trillion price tag, with Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma noting that the money is not budgeted.
If we're going to borrow $2 trillion and we don't even know that the previous money is unspent yet, why are we doing this? We're putting our nation at risk, a greater risk for economic damage, while we're trying to, quote unquote, save our nation.
Roughly 20 hours of debate are expected. A long list of amendments includes a possible $15 minimum wage backed by Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. He points out the wage increase would come over 5 years.
Anyone who says we're raising the minimum wage in 1 year in the midst of a pandemic to $15 an hour is simply not telling the truth.
Despite the speed bump, Schumer said the chamber would stay in session to pass the relief bill. Deb Haaland's nomination for Interior Secretary is headed to the full Senate. Republican Lisa Murkowski joined Democrats in committee to vote for the New Mexico Congresswoman and Native American. Murkowski said she was guided by the wishes of Alaskan Natives and other constituents.
They recognize that this is truly a historic nomination, and in doing so, they believe that Alaska Native issues can be elevated to one of the highest levels of government.
Meanwhile, Arkansas Republican Tom Cotton said he's blocking Merrick Garland's confirmation to head the Department of Justice, citing Garland's, quote, refusal to answer basic questions, unquote. With Neera Tanden out, some Democrats want Shalonda Young to serve as director of the Office of Management and Budget instead. Young is currently nominated as deputy director of the office and testified yesterday.
And if confirmed, I look forward to using my experience in these halls to ensure both branches operate with mutual respect and work towards solutions that will improve the lives of those we serve.
The Biden administration has not ruled Young out, but said it's looking at several possible candidates. and White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki pushed back against criticism of President Joe Biden's Neanderthal remarks regarding the behavior of Republican governors who lift mask mandates.
The behavior of a Neanderthal, just to be very clear, the behavior of.
Psaki noted the comment was a reflection of the president's frustration over people refusing to follow public health guidance to reduce the spread of COVID-19. Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett wrote her first majority opinion yesterday on a case concerning the Freedom of Information Act. Barrett said the ruling will shield federal agencies from having to disclose certain materials under an exception to the law. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Hudson Valley Word of Mouth. I'm your host, Julia Jorn, and I live and work in Round Top in beautiful Greene County. Come along with me as I meander through the Hudson Valley, the Northern Catskills, the Capital Region, and beyond to interview the people behind the special spots and hidden gems that make our area of New York State and our collective community both distinct and diverse. You'll likely discover that you don't have to travel too far to pay them a visit. They may already be in your own backyard or just around the corner. And I'll bet their place might turn out to be that one certain destination you keep meaning to check out. So I'm here to remind you, put it on your list. Together we'll meet shop owners and small business owners, curators, designers, and artists, chefs, farmers, and culinary experts, and other creative entrepreneurs. We'll hear their own personal stories, learn about their unique offerings, and hit them up for their own local recommendations. Thanks for listening.
Today I'm in the historic district of Oak Hill. It's a tiny spot, technically in the town of Durham here in Greene County. I'm standing outside the old Ford store, which was a general store about 150 years ago. And I'm here to pay a visit to Costas, the proprietor of Pigeon, which is now housed on the ground floor. It's a beautiful place featuring soulful artworks and objects, one-of-a-kind finds, antiques, home goods, and books. Costas has lived upstate for about 20 years after attending Bard College in the 1990s. Together with his husband, Jesse James, they founded the design firm Aesthetic Movement now over two decades ago. They live in Rensselaerville with their daughter, which is about a 15-minute drive from Oak Hill. He's also a poet and a publisher, and now to add to that, a shop owner. Come with me as we go inside.
Hi, my name is Costas. Welcome to Pigeon in Oak Hill.
How did you discover Oak Hill in the first place?
First discovered Oak Hill because we had a friend who lived in a house here. And then we bought a house in Schoharie County, so we would always drive through Oak Hill on our way there. And we would pass this store and the one next door and then another one called IU Trip. And they were, they had antique shops. And then there was a great assemblage artist down the street too. It's still there, the storefront where the artist worked, and his daughter still is kind of uses it as a commemoration to his life's work. And I actually bought something from him and never picked it up, and it's probably still there.
Time to go revisit.
But I also got a really great early advertisement for going to Greece travel poster from him for $7.
Amazing.
That I framed.
I love that.
I'll show it to you when you come
I
over.
I would love that. So can you describe the building we're in right now?
Yes, it's landmarked. It's a historic Italianate building. There's an apartment on the second floor, and it has always been storefront. So it was originally called the Ford Store, and that's what it's landmarked under. There's also a post office. The post office was in here. And then in the 70s, it was called the Electric Farm, where this gentleman raised African violets, as well as mind-altering specimens. Mm. Rumor has it. And then it was a great record store for a long time, too. And so it has really a great legacy. you know, a real diverse legacy. But I remember it being kind of an antique store that was part of the DeWitt, and they had more architectural salvage stuff because we have really big doors. So I think it was easy to move big things in and out.
Can you tell us why your store is called Pigeon?
Well, pigeon is a form of communication between two parties that don't speak a common language. And since I'm a poet, I really liked the word, the idea that, you know, the common language would be the thing that someone is buying. Idioms are great. And so I think of the idiomatic, like a pigeon language, or being really rich, even though it's so simplified. So I love the word.
But that's spelled P-I-D-G-I-N, not
correct.
Pigeon like
yes.
The bird. So let's walk around
okay.
And take a look.
Great. We have books here because how can you not have books? They are important to a home and to our souls. One of my favorite books, and I'll carry it until it goes out of print, is this Albert York book. And he was very reclusive. He had a small body of work relatively to his, you know, other artists are very prolific, but he was very meticulous in his judgment of his work. If artists could be saints, I would nominate Albert York as into sainthood, and I just love his work, and I will always carry that book. It's beautiful. The works seem devotional. He has so many paintings of cows, which cows are beautiful, and if you don't know Albert York, I always tell people that's my favorite book in the store. He's an American master, and he's a New York painter. But we're primarily an antique store, so I would be remiss if I didn't choose an old object here. And the object that I love that's here has been sold. It was the first purchase of the store. So it's this little rabbit. It's a moon-gazing hare, actually. It's, I think, Japanese. It's iron, but someone appointed a little bit of gold leaf on its side, but it's looking up at nothing, or the sky, but I think at nothing. It's really beautiful, and even though it's up there, everybody notices it. So it's a real magnet.
It's so unique and so sweet.
Yes.
And hopeful.
Yeah.
Well, I always love finding something unique that has its own history that you don't necessarily know. And I love the idea of things traveling between people's homes.
Yes.
And finding new families and finding new stories.
Yeah.
What's your earliest story in a store?
Well, I feel very comfortable in a storefront for whatever reason, because my mother had a tailoring shop. And she,
and who was this?
In Chicago, called Angie's Cleaners and Alterations. She had me in a playpen, which now seem like they don't exist anymore. But I would sit in the playpen and I think watch her. I don't remember this, but there's pictures, and she told me. And then my grandmother came from Greece, my literate grandmother, and basically took over watching me while my mom worked 6 days a week for a long, long time. My grammar school was always near my mother's cleaners because it was in our neighborhood, and so I would always go there before school and after school and, you know, like go into the register, take a couple dollars and get a donut from the bakery.
So you were always in the shop?
I was always in the store.
Whether it was her store or someone else's store?
Yeah, yeah.
What are your recommendations? Maybe something
well,
we don't know, or a hidden gem?
Well, we have a house in Rensselaerville, and I tell everybody that they have to go there, and especially to go to the Hike Preserve. It's one of the oldest research, ecological and nature research centers in the country, 2,000 acres of hiking trails.
They have classes where you can learn the footprints in the snow.
Yes.
To learn what animals have made
yes.
them.
Yes, yeah.
So track marks and then other types of really wonderful educational classes, especially for children.
Yes.
In terms of identifying things in nature.
Yes. There's even these wonderful night walks that you could do with specialists when we're not in a pandemic.
Well, something to look forward to.
Yes, yeah.
And then what about, doesn't have to be local, but what are other places, ideas, movies, books that you could recommend, maybe here or beyond?
Oh.
What are you telling your friends about that you're excited about?
Well, I tell everybody about this bookstore in Pittsfield, which I've never been to, but I have a retail crush on them from afar. And they have the best name. It's called Familiar Trees. Which isn't that amazing, that name? And I can't wait to visit.
And then what about anything else that might be something none of us know about that you might recommend?
Well, other than time travel into the past, I would love to go to this flea market in Athens.
That's Athens,
Greece.
New York?
No, Athens, Greece. It's called Monastiraki, and it's basically it's kind of like there's antique shops, but then there's also street sellers that put out a blanket and put their wares on it. But it was one of my early memories of old things, and. I found it exhilarating, and to this day, I miss it, and I...
When were you there?
Oh, as a child, my parents would send me to live with my family, so I wouldn't forget my ancestry, so, and language, and so they would send me there, and I would kind of jump from aunt and uncle to grandmother's. What's beautiful about Athens is that you always see the ruins embedded in kind of an urban metropolis with like these mid-century buildings as well as older buildings, but it's always there as a presence, so it's really beautiful.
Well, being here in Pigeon.
in my life.
Hey, my name is Legacy from the Perfect 10 Club, and you're listening to 90.7 WGXC Acra.
May 26th, WGXC has a very special event that you can tune in or turn out for. That's right, you can turn out for an actual local event. This one's at the Greenville Drive-In, and it's celebrating WGXC's 10th anniversary. It's come out to the WGXC 10th Anniversary Drive-In event at the Greenville Drive-In, Wednesday, May 26th. With performances from Stephen Merritt of the Magnetic Fields. He'll play 10 songs in 10 minutes for WGXC's 10th anniversary. We'll also have performances from Anna Fritz, from Catskill's Brian DeWan, from Jen Cutler and Quentin Anna Wixwo, and from Jess Spear. There'll also be DJ sets from Lunar Moss, from Jeff Economy and Alana Medlock, from Mayuka Fujino, DJ Var, and Dan Seward from the Battlefield Earth Show, all WGXC volunteer programmers. Plus, there'll be films from Charles and Ray Eames and Heath Iverson from Ghent, another WGXC programmer. So come on out May 26th for a very special show, WGXC's 10th Anniversary Drive-In event, the Greenville Drive-In.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Garrett Roche of Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast, March the 5th, 2021. I'm Mike Clifford. New rules now in place that should help New York meet its clean energy goals by speeding up the process of siting large-scale wind and solar projects.
It's been less than a year since a law was passed requiring new streamlined rules for permitting and operating conditions of clean energy projects that generate 25 megawatts or more. Under the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, the state must get 70% of its energy from renewable sources by 2030. But Ann Reynolds, who heads the Alliance for Clean Energy New York, points out that under the old rules, it could take 5 to 10 years just for projects to get the permits to begin construction.
These new rules will really help get projects reviewed and permitted faster. They create uniform standards so the developers know what rules they have to abide by, and the towns would know too.
She adds the wind and solar projects are also expected to create tens of thousands of new good-paying jobs and new tax revenue for the state. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott criticized President Joe Biden for calling his decisions to lift COVID restrictions and mask mandates earlier this week Neanderthal thinking. CNBC reports that Abbott claimed that the Biden administration had been releasing immigrants in South Texas, and that had been exposing Texans to COVID. While Abbott defended his decision to lift most of his COVID-19 restrictions, opponents say he's just trying to change the subject from Texas.
We're talking with Michael O'Neill, who is the communications manager of the Green Party of the United States. And a lot of progressives are pushing H.R. 1 in Congress, also known as For the People Act. And it's being, you know, described as a legislation that will expand the rights of people to cast a vote in the United States, and particularly viewed as necessary with the Republicans planning to curtail at the state level a lot of voting rights. But the Green Party says we need to read the entire bill, not just the good parts, but there's also bad parts. So Michael, what are some of the concerns that the Green Party has with H.R. 1?
H.R. 1 reminds me of the old quote from Boss Tweed of the Tammany Hall machine politics days, where he said, "You folks can vote any way you want as long as I can choose the candidates." And so while H.R. 1 does have some important and needed provisions for protecting voters, unfortunately, it's using those as camouflage to conceal this poison pill that will severely curtail the ability of alternative parties like the Green Party to compete in presidential elections. Specifically, they're going after public matching funds for presidential primary candidates that the Greens have been able to make use of in 2012, 2016, 2020. And in fact, we're the only party whose candidates make use of those federal primary matching funds. But they're going to quintuple the amount of money that needs to be raised in order to access those matching funds. It used to be, or it currently is, $5,000 in each of 20 states that need to be raised by a candidate. They want to change that to $25,000 in each of 20 states.
Now, I understand that H.R. 1 is actually beginning to move this week in committee in the House of Representatives. Now, the proponents of this bill will argue that what they're doing is actually trying to, you know, clean up special interest money in the, presidential elections. Yet that doesn't seem to be an accurate portrayal.
It's a total bait and switch. And we have, in a recent Gallup poll, 62% of U.S. voters saying that we need a new major party, that they want more political choices. And by moving the goalposts on these matching funds, they're trying to put this important aid to alternative parties and independent candidates that have been able to show substantial support out of reach. And they're trying to further entrench their own little cartel. So in addition to that, the H.R. 1 provisions will completely eliminate the public funding block grants that are available for general elections under the current law, which parties could access by winning at least 5% of the vote. So that 5% of the vote for federal presidential funding that many Greens like myself have been organizing for and voting for generations, that's going to be completely eliminated. And they're going to do matching funds all the way through Election Day. At least under the current system, if you were using the block grant program for the general election, you could stop fundraising with the nomination, and then you can focus on actually campaigning and talking to the American people for the rest of the election. They want to extend matching funds all the way through Election Day. That's a big step backwards for public campaign finance reform. And then there are all the provisions that will just blow up the amount of money that candidates can contribute to each other and that the national parties can contribute to each other. That's going to inflate dramatically.
Now, I will say, reading your press release, one of the things that really struck my eyes was they actually increased the amount of money.
Western Governors University is an accredited nonprofit comprehensive university offering competency-based programs for adult learners that lead to in-demand careers.
So it's part of the broad spectrum of online learning that's available now, which I guess is more in the public eye than ever before.
It certainly has become a heightened need in the times of pandemic.
So we hear an awful lot now about the impact of online learning on students in the early education, not so much higher education, ranging from the social cost of online learning and the lack of socialization for young people, all the way to the difficulty getting access to the education because of the lack of universal broadband. Where does WGU fit into that spectrum there? Is that a challenge for you as well?
It is a challenge for our students or our prospective students. So for us, it's a policy issue that we want to pay close attention to. We feel like opportunity is being withheld from people in certain rural communities, but also in some urban communities, simply because they don't have access to high-speed internet broadband because of the cost. So it's we believe it's an issue because it really is a barrier to opportunity.
And is this something that's been heightened for you and your students because of the pandemic, or is it just more of what you've been dealing with since the university was founded in the 1990s?
It is really more of what we've been trying to address since we were founded in 1997. So it has become heightened in the pandemic simply because of, for example, if high-speed internet broadband is not available to a family, and now all of a sudden the K-12 learners, the children in that family, are at home as well, now you've really kind of used up the capacity for learning in that home. And so it is a zero-sum game. If there's only so much bandwidth in a household, it's being tapped. So the pandemic has affected it for some of our students in that way.
So the Albany Common Council was just in the news, having ordered a study on municipal internet. Does the Western Governors University have a position on those types of initiatives?
We really applaud any entity. If it's the federal government, it's the state government, it's a city council. It is really important for the question to be asked, and because we need to know specific needs that are hyper-local and how best to address those needs. So we really applaud the Common Council on that vote to do that, to commission that study.
So the digital divide has been an issue for decades. Do you find that the moment makes it more likely that there'll be traction on the issue and maybe some progress made? Because now really the thing that is universal is the need for broadband.
Absolutely correct. The moment is here. The moment has been here since we're coming up close to a year since the need became so great because of the need to isolate due to the pandemic. A light has shone on that to show how stark the differences are in the digital divide. We see it most profoundly when we look at K-12 learners because of the rapid shift to learning from home, and so many students in poverty, so many students in rural areas were not able to access the learning that they needed. But the need has been there all along. It's just in fact, the pandemic has really heightened the attention to it. And potentially a good outcome would be that we have recognized a need that has existed for a long period of time, and it will get the time and attention that it deserves.
It seems like a real challenge in that you both have a very obvious growing need for universal broadband. At the same time, as there's, it seems like a growing consensus in the country that everything should be privatized. And most of what I've seen about universal broadband suggests that the best way of doing that.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. We'll be right back.
This poem I wrote probably 4 or 5 years ago, because it mentions 5 years ago. And I mention many of the people who were at the who were on at the beginning of the program, at the beginning went on the air, and many of whom are not here anymore. But that doesn't mean they weren't a part of the history and that they didn't put in a lot of effort into getting WGXC on the air. So here it goes. About 5 years ago, I learned with great elation that Columbia Green was getting a new radio station. So I decided to talk to the busiest man, a Mr. Tom Rowe, and asked him quite bravely about me having a weekly Irish show. He said, "Why should we have an Irish show on WGXC, Tony Fallon?" So I told him about Kitty Kelly, Tara Gold, and Foster and Allen. I told him that I had the records by the likes of Carmel Quinn, Paddy Noonan, Richie O'Shea, and even Martin Flynn. We would also play the three tenors who could sing so very loud, as well as Louis Brown, Frank Patterson, and Kenny McLeod. We'd get the touring talent from all the East Durham shows and play the lively jigs and reels in the winter when it snows. I'd mention Kaylee's The Arts Week and Saturday Night Dances, and from Jennifer in the gift shop, get cassettes of Marie Francis. Dermot Henry would sing to us about his mother from Mayo, or that other lovely song about the green hills of Sligo. I play Pat Roper and Mary McGonigal, both of whom of Scottish stock, and often play One Day at a Time and The Lady of Knock. I'd interview guests from afar and take requests on the phones. And when I needed rebel songs, I'd cue up the Wolf Tones. I'd have football and hurling results every Sunday night. And if anybody important was in the garden, I'd mention the fight. Well, he sized me up and said, "You got a good line of baloney, but how can I have a radio show with a host named Tony?" And now the station is on the air and I'm the Irish host. It's also on the net, so I'm heard in Ireland, coast to coast. I put on the first show on WGXC on a February night, and I can tell you firsthand that the host was full of fright. And then to make it worser, I made a whole lot of mistakes, and everybody loved the first song about Killarney's Lakes. Then over the next few days, I got requests to keep the show on going, and with the word of mouth and promotion, the audience kept growing. There are all kinds of programs here of this and that, who knows. They will even tell you how an onion or a potato or a carrot grows. There's great enthusiasm, and the Lord bless us and save us. What would we all be all today without smiling Al Davis? There's Max, Karen, Dharma, and of course there's Joan, who helps me with pronouncements, the computer and the phone. I knew we had a good lineup from the very start, and putting Paul in charge of news was very, very smart. Sarah is behind the scene and for new memberships is reaching. Galen heads up fundraising and Kaya and Corey are always teaching. There are lists of others I have left out without bad intention, but they will all be recognized at our 10th convention. Meanwhile, this big happy family thinks it's died and gone to heaven as they get their weekly fix of radio on 9.7. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
This is Nature Note with Angela Gibbons of Earthwalk Vermont.
Today I'm feeling thankful for the remarkable and playful river otter. We rarely get to see these large aquatic members of the weasel family because they spend most of their time in the water. However, otters are active year-round. You may get lucky to see an otter sliding or bounding along in the snow as they travel over land from one water body to another. River otters make their homes in burrows, alongside streams, wetlands,